guys. Happy Friday. And thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. All right, UFC 307 is here. And coming up on today's show, I'm going to talk about the big showdown between Alex Pereira and Khalil Rountree. Plus, there's a women's bantamweight tournament going on. Izzy wants to fight again soon, and I'm going to tell you why it all matters. I got a lot to get to on today's podcast. Let's begin here. Rachmanov has a fight. Signed. Done. How do I know that? Rachmanov told us. Ian Gary has a fight. Signed. Done. How do I know that? Ian Gary told us. Now, I don't think you have to be Kreskin to figure out two guys in the same weight class that have kind of been stumbling their way to each other, who have talked about each other in the media, both signed contracts on the same day, both released the idea that they signed contracts on the same day. Like, it appears glaringly obvious they have signed to fight each other. Right? Maybe not. I don't know if we have enough evidence. Because 3 days later, Ian Gary made a piece mocking Colby Covington, who Ian Gary has been very vocal that he would like to fight, and Covington has been very vocal that he would like to fight Ian Gary, and that, for the crowd, seems to be the one people wanted, not to mention, when one guy comes off the board, right, the dominoes sure do fall. If Gary was to be tied up with Colby in this scenario, that would leave Rachmanov available, who many people believe should be fighting Blahal for the world championship anyway. So everything starts coming together. But it's a heck of a coincidence, and I do feel like you might look a little foolish if that's all the evidence you have, and you come out and you tell your audience that Gary and Rachmanov are fighting. Now, let me, a little bit of how the sausage is made for you guys. The UFC is very big on, I mean, this is something that they really do believe, and it will bother them when it doesn't happen. They want to control and release information in their way. Whether that's a press conference, whether that's a headline, whether, hey, you owe a reporter a favor from something and you're going to give him a big scoop. Like, this is the business side of it. Maybe you're making packages and getting B-roll and you want to drop it right in the middle of a pay-per-view if you think it's a big enough fight, just for example. But big fight, little fight, any fight, the policy is all the same, which is you're going to have the information before somebody else. Don't do anything with it. Let us be the ones to tell. And you could end up the first fight of the night, or you could end up the main event. That policy never changes. Like, there's not a time that UFC goes, oh yeah, this fight doesn't matter. Do whatever you want with it. Never. It's the same policy. It's very consistent. And I share that with you. Rachmanov over the weekend had come out and he had said, we have a fight. It is signed. It is done. It's happening. We got a date. We got a venue. We've got an opponent. But I can't tell you who it is. The UFC will do that soon. And that's not as though the UFC approved that. They would, the way they wanted it was say nothing, but fighters can't. Oh my God, they can't. It's a drug. It's a drug. You put something out on Twitter and all of a sudden people are writing you back. You're getting thumbs up. You're getting a little heart on the Instagram. It's one of these things. This becomes your contact with the outside world. And the contact for the attention of these people is you must give them something. So you give them the fact that you have something, even if you tell them, I can't tell you what it is, but I do have it. All right. And I share just so you understand where these things come from. And really nobody's above it. Like, you can get a really stoic guy that has whipped everybody's ass that's ever come before him, like Rachmanov. He can't avoid that temptation and didn't. Or you could take a guy that does enjoy the media and is a little bit more savvy and strategic with it and has also whipped everybody that came before him in Ian Gary. He, of course, can't control that temptation, and so he did it. But the mere fact that these guys both did it within the same 15-hour period, and they happen to be in the same weight class, and they happen to be undefeated, and they happen to be aligned through previous press and interviews, doesn't mean it's against each other. What would you make of, right? That's the piece of evidence I gave you, but now there's another one, so tell me what you would make of this. What do you make of Ian Gary recently coming after Colby? Because Ian has let us know that he does, in fact, have a fight. So if it's not against Colby, that would be very weird. That would be very weird to start taking shots at a guy when Colby's free, Colby's available, but you're not. You know that you're not. You have a signed contract for somebody else. It's very different. You come and pull that on the world before the world knows that you know that it can't happen. You're the one that told the world it cannot happen. That would be weird. It doesn't mean it didn't happen. But as circumstantial evidence goes, it's relevant. Like, if I would have left out the fact that Rachmaninoff had done this, and I only came and I told you, Ian Garry has signed a fight, that's for sure. The announcement's coming soon. Ian Garry is heckling Colby Covington on social media. Boom, you'd have thought you were Perry Mason in the room and put them together, wouldn't you? And where it becomes more interesting, and in fairness, the most interesting, is of these beautiful names that just got mentioned, none of them were Blaha Muhammad, the champion of the world. None of them. Ian Garry could draw into Blaha right now. No question you can make that fight. Ian Garry is completely undefeated. Just let me stop you right there. Rankings and all these, let me stop you right there. He's never lost. He is younger. You can make that fight right now. Rachmaninoff is a situation where, if not this one, the next one, it's not just you could make it, you should. Right? You're going to need one hell of an explanation as to how Rachmaninoff is drawing into anybody other than the champion when he's got the most beautiful record in the industry. Industry-wide or company-wide. So you would then still be left, right? You'd still be left. Like, let's say, okay, we go with that one. We put Ian Garry, we put Colby together, off we go. Maybe it'll even be the same card. So we've got that coveted backup fighter should we need it as a built-in mechanism. And we're going to put Blaha. And he's going to take on Shavkat. And our dud of press conferences that we foresee are now a problem that's solved because Colby Covington will be there. Okay, you've done a lot. I agree. Where's Kamar Usman go? And right now, that is the great wild card of that weight class. That is the great wild card of two different weight classes. I have not been given totally clear to where I will accept it without a second look. I have not been given that information that Kamar Usman is not going to go to 185 pounds. I just have it. It appears he's coming to 70. It appears he's staying at 70. It appears there's less talk about 185 than there is at 70, but 70 isn't perfectly clear. Kamar Usman to draw into Blaha Muhammad, you could do. No problem. Blaha Muhammad versus Shavkat, you could do no problem. The idea of getting Shavkat and Garry, two perfectly undefeated guys, and put in there together, which doesn't elevate one, it eliminates one. I'm light on that idea. I think it's a coincidence. I think Shavkat Rachmaninoff making the announcement that he's got something, showing us a bout agreement, and Ian Garry doing the exact same thing, only hours apart, I think it's a coincidence. And if Shavkat does in fact have a signed contract, and Bully B, who's no better or easier about not letting you know when he's got something, it would drop back into Usman, who is a veteran, who's been there, who's done that, who's had plenty of big announcements and isn't going to be just like a child, like a petulant child dying to tell you. So we have some confusion. Right? But you're also seeing some headlines. You're seeing people that are putting their necks out there and they're making announcements of fights. What I'm here to announce is those aren't done yet. And they're not true. They might end up being accurate. They might. But they're not done yet. And they don't have information that we don't. And if you could only have the source of all of the top guys, if you could just have one source to then have to turn in right answers, you're best to choose Kamara. What are they going to do with him and where is he going to go? Because he could, as of right now, fight for the world championship. That's true. You get Rachmaninoff one more victory and he stays with all finishes and an unblemished record, you now are going to have a hard time selling anybody in front of him, an exponentially harder time selling the idea that anybody goes in front of him. So if you plan to use Usman at all in a championship scenario, the time is now. I mean, right now. Adesanya is going to fight at the end of this year or next year, and just for fighting's sake. He didn't have anybody wants to fight or somebody wants to fight for, like, say, title stuff. He's going to fight just for fighting's sake. Now, I do understand that, and that represents a, well, nobody. That doesn't represent anybody. Even the guy on the bottom of the card, who you don't know of, who just got signed, he's fighting for the money. Real serious stuff, right? But it's his bread and meat, and if he don't win, he don't eat. This is a very real thing. Israel Adesanya is going to fight just for fighting's sake. Okay, I don't know what to do with that. And this is one of the greats. This is not only one of the greats, this is one of the greats ever at understanding you. This is a rich, famous guy who can whip everybody's ass no matter what room he's in, and he always stayed a man of the people. He would get out of that ring, and he's got a $5 million check waiting for him as soon as he gets through the curtains, but he decides to stop and do photos with Booger Beard. And I'm always watching Izzy. And I genuinely can figure out where he's going. Genuinely. He will leave breadcrumbs. If you're into that kind of thing, if you're into studying and watching the master of the manipulation, this one is a problem. And it's not a problem for me, but a lot of the greats themselves don't know why. And I've seen this tested. I could give you names. There have been greats where a rule change, any sport, right, where a rule change will come to the sport and all of a sudden they're not only not a great anymore, they're not even a top 10. They weren't aware of how much they relied on, and then fill in the blank. We just saw this happen in the NCAA with Dean Heil. Two-time NCAA champion on his way to a third. Do I need to add undefeated? This is one of the great collegiates ever. They changed a rule, which is so wild. I mean, I just couldn't believe they did this to him. But they changed a rule. He didn't have time to adjust. He had no idea how much his style relied on the position that the rule greatly affected. Not only Mr. Undefeated and two-time champion and great ever, they ended up not placing it. I hope when he sees this, he knows I say that out of respect. But I will just share for you, sometimes the greats don't know all the elements that got him there. I can deal with it. I can deal with anything. I am a fighter and adversity is my friend, right? These are all wonderful things to say. And you sit a group of children down and you tell them and you aspire to be just like me. But you do still have to know where the cracks are. Now, Israel Adesanya lost a 25-minute kickboxing match against Sean Strickland. Cost him a world championship. And it was a version of Izzy that we hadn't seen before. The great competitor and the great kickboxer and the great fighter and the crowd pleaser. Like, there was just a number of things that we hadn't seen before. And we knew there was a reason, and we were just waiting to be told it. We were just waiting to hear, you know, maybe an injury over here or, you know, a death in the family, and it was emotional. But we were waiting to hear something because that simply didn't look like him. And he never offered it. He never once offered any kind of an excuse. He did state one time what happened, which is paramount. I'm going to speed this up for you and not coin him, but do a bad night. Now, I don't believe that you think Sean Strickland is a better kickboxer than Israel Adesanya. I don't think that you believe that, but you're going to see them kickbox for 25 minutes and Sean beat him the entire time. So it would appear that it means that very thing, right? Well, no, let me tell you specifically what was missing from that fight. Anger. They tell people not to fight with emotion. This is nothing personal. You goddamn right it's personal. I can't think of anything more personal. You say, well, it shouldn't be that way. Well, it is. And some guys can't deal with that. They can't deal that emotion. And those are the guys you got to talk to them. You got to settle them down, right? You got to talk to them. You got to be real calm, real matter of fact, like George St. Pierre. There's other guys who live on the fringe. And their best version is going to come out. They're like an animal backed into a corner where there is nowhere else to go. They can stay there and die, or they can go forward. And that's Izzy. And Izzy did not have heat with Strickland. It wasn't supposed to be Strickland. It was supposed to be Dricus. Izzy had everything that he needed. He had the opponent, the reason, the anger, the crowd, the skill. He had everything that he needed, and it got taken away. And he tried to manufacture it with Sean. I watched him doing it. that wasn't the guy that he had the problem with. And it's very important to understand that detail about Izzy's career. If you want to explain Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero, how did we get there? How do we get a guy coming off of a loss into a world title fight? Well, Izzy asked for him. He didn't ask for him because it was a big money fight. He damn sure didn't ask for him because it was an easy fight. In fact, it was the worst possible matchup you could give. You got a tall, skinny kickboxer from New Zealand taking on an Olympic medalist from Cuba. But somewhere along the way, Yoel had upset Izzy. I don't know that story, guys. My job is to tell you stories. My job is easier and turns into money when I can tell you a controversial story. I don't know what happened there. It wasn't a huge storyline, is my point. This wasn't something that was going to change the game. It was personal and it was real, and Izzy wanted to fight him for it. And did. And looked really good. And I could take that and just keep on transitioning. I could bring up Pereira and all of those fights. And what got him up and what drove him, what kept him sharp and what kept him hungry. I could bring all of that in, but I could not tell that story, and it doesn't exist without the personal side, the very personal side. And Izzy, better than anybody, tells us who he's fighting. And when we do it the other way, we're doing it the wrong way. And I don't know if Izzy is aware of that. Fighting for fighting's sake, fighting just to fight. Even the bottom of the card is fighting for money. He's fighting for purpose. He's fighting for ego. All of those things are good. Boy, all of those things make a level of sense. And some guys can get away with it. But there's things that you do to stay in shape. There's hobbies and there's exercises and there's workouts. You don't play this sport. You do not to stay in shape. You do not for a workout cage fight. It's one of the very few sports that you just do not do for recreational purposes. And Izzy is going to be a main event. He's in a very interesting spot. He's going to come back into a main event with or without that belt. Now, there is certain cards, and there is certain scenarios where you could co-main event him. But to make believe that you're going to co-main event him and you're not going to make it five rounds, right? What I'm saying is, in that kind of a spot, there is no fighting for fighting's sake, because that's not who the opponent will be. And Izzy even said, they'll either decide or somebody will call me out. Now, he's saying somebody will call me out. He's saying that even if he's not aware. He needs someone to do that. He needs someone to spark a fire. And if you call him out, that's all he needs. Boy, it doesn't take much. He gets pissed off fast, but you got to give him something. You got to give him something. He can't just go in there on a draw that comes out for matchmaking reasons, or a draw that comes out for convenience reasons. A draw that comes out because it's a last-minute replacement. We're in your backyard. We really need your reasons. It doesn't work that way. Not with him. Not with him. I can't tell you for sure what makes him tick. I can only tell you for sure he's got to have that ticking. He doesn't fight for fighting's sake. And Dana doesn't make main events for fighting's sake. So something here is going to have to give. And there's so many incredible matchups at 185. There were so many incredible matchups for Izzy that we simply couldn't do because they couldn't get to the spot to get him, which is a main event, a number one contenders fight. We have so many incredible matchups at 185 booked right now where the loser gets put in a very hard position. I mean, I don't get a fight for the title. I don't get to go on, but I'm a stone cold killer and nobody wants me and I got a super huge rank. And like now all of a sudden we can have some fun as fans where we can start to get these guys to find one another. We can start to get top five guys against each other because they both stubbed their toe somewhere along the way. It's great matchups and it's great parity. But there is no scenario where Izzy, if he's looking to serve Izzy, if he's looking to really serve Izzy, he's got to find out what this is about. He's got to figure that out. Where does this get me? What does it take me? What's on the line here? Why do I not like this guy? What did this guy do to me or someone I care about? It has to be that way. And it's for most guys, it's different, but he's different. Fine line, right? It's a fine line in genius and insanity. And you really see that in the arts. And I love the idea of Izzy fighting. I love the idea that he's willing, but I do not support the idea of him fighting just for fighting's sake. The odds makers do not agree with me, or for that matter, Kamaru Usman, because we're saying the same thing. Talking about Roundtree, guys. Roundtree, I'm going to call him a 4-1 underdog to Claril. Apologize, to the champion Pierre. You got a plus 500, you got a minus 380. I'm just going to tell you he's a 4-1 spread. But let's use that number 4-1. 3-1 is what the odds were the night that Charles Oliveira took on Islam Makhachev. And if you'll recall, so many people think that was a title fight or the night Islam took Charles's belt away. It was actually a vacated title. But Charles was a 3-1. Now, they tried to remake that match after what we had seen, which wasn't close. It wasn't competitive. And I'm only sharing that because when they tried to make the rematch and even signed it, and my partners DraftKings put out a line, they put out a line favoring Islam 3-1. It was 3-1 the first time. It was 3-1 in the mythical second time. Now, you got Khalil 4-1. So DraftKings believes that Charles was more likely to beat Islam than Khalil is to beat Pereira. That's interesting. And do you want to know why that's interesting? Because of all the different ways that Charles had to beat Islam, which was all of them. A decision, you could see that, no problem. Submission, you could see that, no problem. Catch him and knock him out. Anybody that fights in 4-ounce gloves and anything can happen, you hear all these expressions because they're true. You could see that, no problem. It's not like that in this fight. I don't think that you could see, and let's start with Pereira, winning any other way than finish. Using strikes. Do you disagree with that? Isn't that at least the most likely if we're talking numbers, right? Everything's a broad stroke. We don't know. But isn't that most likely how you would see it? I don't think any of you believe he's going to go out and submit him or find a rear naked choke or an armbar off of his back. I wouldn't be stunned if we went over to DraftKings and looked at the prop bets and that wasn't even an option because quite literally nobody bet it. Any disagreement? Okay. How would Khalil win? And I do acknowledge that Khalil has one way to win. He's got to knock Pereira out. So now we got two guys playing the same game, and we have a good established reason for believing that one guy is better at playing that game. But from the beginning of time, when you have somebody break down a fight, they'll always go, well, you know, it's 4-ounce gloves and anything can happen. Like, it's almost like they're impossible to give an analysis without hedging somewhere in that direction. But that's not really what we've got here. For sure, that's going to happen. But to who? And I just bring that to you. 4-1. Wow. I could see why Pereira would be the favorite. I would expect Pereira to be the favorite. Pereira is the greatest. Pereira is well known. Khalil Roundtree is unknown. Can we agree? Can we agree that we're ultimately going popularity? Because if you wanted to look at Pereira's last five fights and juxtapose that record against Khalil's last five fights, if you're Team Pereira, you're not going to like that number. In your mind, where Khalil has absolutely no chance. Well, over the past 2.5 years, win for win, fight for fight, one's taking on champions, the other's taking on former number one contenders. I mean, it wasn't as though it was an easy schedule in the last five for the last five. One of them went and oh. And I'm only suggesting that for you. Khalil is not a better fighter than Alex Pereira. Now, how would we define that? Like, what would your litmus test be? And for me, it's not championships. It's not Jordan's got 6 rings and LeBron has 4. It's not. Like the real question, if you were to really answer that honestly, right, DraftKings has the best practical method of doing that, which is you part with your money. And what I'm going to say, of course, is mythical, but you got a magic wand, and you can give your son one of those two guys' skills, Pereira or Roundtree, and then your son is going to have to get in the ring and fight the other one. I think that's where you would really be forced to break things down and go, okay, here's who I think is better. And Pierre is certainly unique. He's got a unique power. His style is not overly dynamic. Most of the guys that have come and set the world on fire with their stand-up abilities, where we all stand back and go, wow, he's the best, Anderson Silva comes to mind. Roy Jones comes to mind. Floyd comes to mind. Demetrius Johnson comes to mind. But they have something. They're dynamic. They are just as likely to jump in the air, spin around, and kick you in the mouth as they are to stand on one foot and do it straight on, throw that shot to your mouth. They're very, very dynamic guys. Pierre is not that. Pierre is very straight, very by the books. It's called running the numbers. If you're in a gym, you got a coach, he's holding the focus mitts, doing the pads with you, you're running the numbers. That's how Pierre fights. It's a 1-2-5, it's a 10-3, back to a 10. And it works, and he doesn't miss. And as tough as he looks, he has not actually demonstrated or shown us an ability to take a punch any other way than how everybody else you would expect to take a punch, right? I mean, he's not like got this masterful chin and it's tested constantly, like he is Nate Diaz, for example, and he just won't go down. He's Chris Lieben and he's going to walk through anything. He hasn't actually demonstrated that. He's very long. He's got height. He understands that the best defense is a good offense, meaning if I'm attacking you and having you cover and respond, I don't have to worry about anything because you're not throwing back at me. But when somebody does choose to throw back, he is a human being. So when you come into a situation like that, where it's very clear that Pereira is better, at least in our opinions, being better and winning a fight, being better and protecting yourself for every moment, these are very different things. What Khalil needs to win is that one shot, right? He's got that power. He's shown that and demonstrated it. The mental battle, right? He's not going to need to control and get off the bottom. He's not going to have worked every single day at scrambling and getting back to top. He's not going to find himself in an upper position and he must lock it in and strangle and or stretch this guy out right here and now. It's not like that. Khalil has to land that one shot, and we know that he has it. And we do know about Pereira that his ability and or iron chin is not something we've actually seen. He appears to be really tough, but if somebody can get to him, which is hard to do, they can hurt him, stumble him, separate him from consciousness, the same as anyone else. So you don't always have a battle of who's better. I'm very confident in telling you this, Pereira. I'm very confident in telling you if it went to the judges, where they fought five rounds, or they fought 500 rounds, Pereira is going to win more of those rounds. He's going to win more of those spots. He's going to be more dominant in certain positions, but that's not the game that they're playing. And there's not a spot, man. When you got a grappler, it's not necessarily like that. Like, you start to take the time away, right? This grappler is going to be on the ground, whether he's top or bottom, but that time that he's on top or bottom and on the canvas, he's not standing up. He's not playing that game. He's not in that, well, anybody can catch anybody. He's not there. I don't think that you believe Pereira is going to go take Roundtree down, or that he's even equipped with this skill, or that mythically he's even going to try. So now you've got 25 minutes, right? You've got the full allotted amount of time. Anywhere you have that expression, well, a guy can catch him, and you can do that as long as they're standing up and they're trading. These guys are going to stand, and they are going to trade for however long this fight goes. Khalil can lose rounds. He can lose moments. He can lose scenarios. He can have his leg hurts and his nose is bleeding. He can have all of those things. He will still be in an opportunity to land that shot. That environment won't change. That environment of two guys on their feet, I'm throwing at you and you're throwing at me. He's going to have 25 minutes to do it. And I understand where it's more unlikely to happen than it is likely. I do understand that. But every upset, and not just in our sport, not just Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas, not just Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey. Every upset has a couple of commonalities. And the first, the number one thing, is the person who is upset is in a fight, not only harder than they thought it was, but those viewing, those watching, they find themselves in a fight harder than the world knew it was going to be. And that is exactly where Pereira is out. where Pera is at. And that's why Kamara is taking Roundtree. That's why I'm taking Roundtree. You guys are going to DraftKings. You're saying you don't think that's going to happen, but you are going to be clenched up and on the edge of your feet for all 25 minutes. Because there is no ground game. There is nowhere to rest. There is no push him against the fence. There is no, oh, this is Dolan, wait for the referee to stand him up. That's not going to happen. Numbers matter. You like the numbers. DraftKings likes the numbers. Going to Pera. Some numbers you don't like is winning percentage between each of these athletes in the last 3 years. Get ready, fight fans. UFC 307 is here, and with two championship titles on the line, the stakes have never been higher. Join the excitement with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. With the light heavyweight and women's bantamweight titles at stake, it's going to be a night for the ages. If you're a new customer, here's a golden opportunity. Wager $5 and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Make sure you enter the code CHAEL. That's code CHAEL, C-H-A-E-L. All new customers will get $200 in bonus bets with just a $5 deposit, only on DraftKings, where the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See eligibility terms and responsible gaming resources at dkng.co/mm.
It's official. We are in fall. Guys, it is the busiest and best time of the year for team sports and sports fans. Look, you got the NFL. You got college football. You got NHL and MLB postseason. Don't be left out of the season by trying to run your e-commerce business all on your own. Let me introduce you to the perfect teammate, Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify. Home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret that with Shop Pay, you can boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts are going abandoned and you're gonna get more sales. Businesses that sell more simply sell on Shopify. We use Shopify over at Bad Guy Inc. All of our merchandise, and it will not disappoint you. I want you to upgrade your business. I want you to sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/chale. That's Shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/chale to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. It's official. We are in fall. Guys, it is the busiest and best time of the year for team sports and sports fans. Look, you got the NFL. You got college football. You got NHL and MLB postseason. Don't be left out of the season by trying to run your e-commerce business all on your own. Let me introduce you to the perfect teammate, Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify. Home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret that with Shop Pay, you can boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts are going abandoned and you're gonna get more sales. Businesses that sell more simply sell on Shopify. We use Shopify over at Bad Guy Inc. All of our merchandise, and it will not disappoint you. I want you to upgrade your business. I want you to sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/chale. That's Shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/chale to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. You can't be a specialist anymore. You cannot be a specialist in MMA and win and compete and get to the highest levels. It used to be that way. Everybody would come in as a specialist, as a matter of fact, with whatever that might be. They were a collegiate wrestler. They had been to Abu Dhabi for their jiu-jitsu skills. They're a K-1 veteran. It's very normal. When I started the sport, that represented everybody. Right? They'd done karate since they were a little kid. Their dad owned a studio. Did all their homework and even slept on the mats. They lived at this karate gym. It's very normal. See the value to wrestling? They add that, get over to something called mixed martial arts. And then when they compete, their opponent is going to have a similar story of what his preferred specialty is. And everything else that he's doing is just as a way to protect yourself so we can get back to that realm. And you'd better look out because now you're in my world. This was very common. As dull as I found it to hear that story over and over, it didn't make it any less accurate. And then all of a sudden, something called mixed martial arts came out. Now, mixed martial arts, while you might be a historian and know that the UFC started in 1993, mixed martial arts is a term that didn't come around until 2001. So your ability to go and find a mixed martial arts gym, it didn't exist. There was nowhere you could drive it down the road. You look up on a sign. There was no sign anywhere that said mixed martial arts studio. Nobody would sign up. Nobody would even know what you were talking about. Relevant. It's very relevant that you understand this point. So they needed to get a bill passed through the Nevada State Legislature. They had to call it something, and they named it Mixed Martial Arts. And that was the day that that was formed, but it still took another decade until you had a mixed martial arts gym. It was after that point of the bill being passed and that vernacular being created and accepted that gyms would begin to have a mixed martial arts program. Or you could come to this gym, and we do have people pursuing mixed martial arts, but not the actual name of the studio, Mixed Martial Arts. I share that with you because we don't have the specialists anymore, I'm told. We have a new breed. We have a new breed of fighter kids that started in a mixed martial arts gym, which was their first foray into any form of combat, and they were 9 and 10 years old when they did it, and those guys are coming up, and therefore, there is no need for specialties. This narrative is out there. This narrative is produced and reproduced, gurgitated or regurgitated. But is it true? Is that true? Alex Pereira, who's never had a wrestling match of any kind. No grappling match, no wrestling, no singlet, no gi. Should you call him a specialist? Think you would. Israel Adesanya certainly got a lot of attention for a guy that never had a wrestling match or a grappling match of any kind. Came through kickboxing, wouldn't you call him a specialist? Holly Holm, all the way back to 2014, she became the champion of the world. She didn't have a judo match, a wrestling match, a jiu-jitsu match that I've ever heard of. Wouldn't you call her a specialist? And I bring that to you because I'm now looking at the most lopsided odds on the entire card, and they favor Kayla Harrison. Now, would you disagree with that? I mean, based on what you've seen from Kaylin, you've seen this domination, you've seen this power and strength, and now she's even illustrated and shown us that she can get down to 135 pounds. Before I tell you anything else, I haven't even told you her opponent's name. I haven't told you if it's 3 rounds or 5 rounds. Is there a part of you that's going, oh yeah, Kayla? Yeah, without even knowing the card, yeah, she's the most dominant. Because that's what DraftKings is saying. They got her as a 10-1. 10-1 favorite. You must bet $1,000 to win $100. Now, there's things out there called a sure thing. This would go into the category of a believed or perceived sure thing. But isn't it interesting that it comes from a specialist? And one thing that I wish that we would do, we have two tournaments right now in the UFC. And Dana White does not love that term. He does not love that marketing aspect. He's never done it, and he's not going to start. I come from a wrestling background. I know tournaments. My favorite sporting event is the Olympic Games. Every single category is in a straight line bracket because they're tournaments. So I'm just sharing. Maybe I've got a biasness, and I enjoy tournaments. But there's no mention of it, and we've got one right now. It's coming up Saturday. We have a 10-1 favorite in Kayla Harrison. And then we have the world title being contested between Pennington and Pena. The winner of each fight will fight each other for the world championship. I think that's fascinating. I think that's incredible. I love tournaments. And now we're going to get the semifinals, both of them on the main card on Saturday. I love this. I love the story. The number one question we always have, it's never who won, it's what's next. That is the most powerful and commonly asked question at the post-fight press conference. What happens next? It's a very rare time that we can answer it, that we know. And here we have Kayla Harrison is a 10-1 favorite. She goes into the category, right? The coveted category of sure thing. How often do we see that? I think it's a big deal and I think it's meaningful. I don't mind people coming in and saying, well, it's this new breed. It's this new breed of fighter. And you had to start this when you were 10 or 11. Like, I don't mind that other than it's not true. Remember when Damian Maia had to like re-explain this to the world that no, one art will do as long as you do it this way. I just think that's fascinating personally. And judo has never had a level of success in our sport. Ronda Rousey and Kayla Harrison, instead of being pitted against each other or pitted against fans or who did it better, I like the idea of them teaming up. They're never going to compete anyway. And there was never really a need for that because Ronda was queen of 135 and Kayla was queen at 155. But now Kayla is at 135. That is Ronda's old weight. And I don't think she's fighting the idea or the images of Ronda. She did it in judo. She greatly surpassed Ronda in judo, but she never mentioned it. She never told anybody. She didn't let the story be told that way. I just like the idea of them coming together. And by the way, what about this specialty business that I'm told isn't real? How far down that roster should we go? This is off the top of my head. Dricus du Plessis. Greco-Roman wrestling. Tash with the national team. All the training camps in South Africa. I don't know that we have somebody who isn't a specialist. And it's a very interesting concept because Kayla's not going to get away from that. As much as people want to tell her to, they want to tell her, hey, go out there. This is MMA and you got to trade the hands and you got to throw some kicks. Like, I do see her doing a little bit of that. But that's another one of these false narratives. And every coach will do it. And every writer will do it. And your teammates will do it. You as the athlete are never going to be bigger and above it. You are going to fall for that. But every bit of time that you spend trying to round out your game, you got the same amount of energy and you're putting the same amount of time in the gym each day. It is simply a question of what are you going to focus on? So as one goes up, your boxing goes up, your kickboxing goes up, something else comes down. And Kayla is the only one who hasn't gotten away from that. She will spend the time. She will learn the technique. She will have a plan B in case she can get to a plan B, but she's never going to use it until plan A failed and is completely exhausted. She's somebody that is truly representing judo. It's really an incredible dynamic. She's taken on a jiu-jitsu black belt. I mean, the oldest question that we've got all the way to 1993 is what happens when you cross arts? I would have always wanted to know. I was a wrestler, never bragged about wrestling, didn't know it was superior. And it turned out it wasn't the absolute best. In fact, Mark Schultz, a wrestling Olympic champion, is the one that told me the only thing that could beat wrestling is jiu-jitsu. And I like to look at it from this aspect. If Kayla's going to win 10-1, how's she going to do it? She going to follow that judo? Most likely. She going to get on top? Most likely. But she's taking on a jiu-jitsu black belt. Do you believe she's going to blow past the guard? Do you believe she's going to submit her? Do you believe she's going to try to find an armbar? Like, all of those things would be very interesting. It's really a built-in part. And you want to talk about discipline, which is a greatly misused term in our sport. It's not just what different styles do you know. The discipline comes here. Do you have the discipline to go out and do what got you here, to dance with the one that brought you, to not look for the oohs and ahs of the crowd? Kayla is in a tournament. Should she come out, she will advance to the finals. Her opponent will be found out later in the evening, and whoever that opponent is will have a world championship. We're in a tournament, and it's awesome. I love tournaments. And that's only part of it. It's already been stated that Rachik and Uncle Liev will draw in to the winner of Roundtree Pereira. It's a tournament. It's a four-man tournament. Happened on accident, but it's happening nonetheless. DraftKings is very confident that Kayla is going to advance to the next round, which doesn't only mean Kayla's going to get her opponent down. It means she's going to beat her when she gets there. Do you agree with that? Going to be fighting Uncle Liev for the world championship. If Pereira is to beat Roundtree, then Uncle Liev is to beat his next opponent, which I think is a very difficult match in Rejic. Now, that's what we're led to believe. That's what we're being told. And it's what you guys want, right? I mean, it needs to happen. You want it for the integrity of the sport. It's what needs to happen. We can't call Pierre great until he beats this guy. And it appears that he's staying away from this guy. Like, that fight has to happen. Isn't that what we're hearing? Isn't that what a lot of people are saying? So the UFC's gone as far as to say that should Pierre beat Roundtree and should Ankalaev beat Rejic, then those two will fight each other. And I chose to word it that way instead of saying they're in the semifinals and the winners will fight the winners. It's not actually what the UFC said. That's just how we interpreted it. They said if Pierre wins and if Ankalaev is to win, then they'll get each other together. But it's not quite what you guys think. And I don't believe that the UFC's back is against the proverbial wall in the point that they must do this, that the integrity of the sport, of the rankings of the division, I don't quite see it that way. I know that narrative's out there, but stay with me on this. People love to dismiss MMA math, and they love to say MMA math doesn't work. MMA math works all the time. There's not a ton of metrics that we have. You can read resumes all day and think which one sounds nicer, but there is nothing more effective than head-to-head competition followed by common opponent. And I tell you that because there is a real belief that Ankalaev would beat Pierre. As a matter of fact, DraftKings came out with a mythical odd and they put Ankalaev in front of Pierre. In fact, they put up five matches, four other ones. Against Pierre, he was the favorite in all of them, except Ankalaev. That's the boogie monster. That's the guy. That's the guy that's being kept back. That's the guy that's telling me. But until you remind people of the common opponent in Jan Blachowicz, no matter how wildly close these matches were, Pierre beat Jan Blachowicz. Ankalaev did not. That appears to be forgotten. And I do even feel as I bring that to you right now, you go, wow. Or you will go back to the really old idea of 1993, which is we have proven that the grappler beats the striker. And I then kind of got to splash some cold water in your face and remind you that Ankalaev's not a grappler. And that one confuses people too. Like there's very few of those Dagestani guys that come out with anything. Like we just do MMA and this is what we did. But if you actually talk to Ankalaev, he will tell you, first off, he's a striker. Thank goodness he's with the Dagestani team so that he could learn all of his grappling, and his grappling is certainly impressive. I'm just correcting so that you do understand exactly what you're saying. Like it could be a really helpful thing. Perception being reality, never proven at anything in life more than this sport. Whoever looks the toughest, he is. But if you got to look closer, at some point that has to be supported with some facts and ideas. And to defeat a style is a really big deal. If you want to talk about the way you're observed or you want to talk about legacy, it's a big deal. Let me bring Israel Adesanya into this. But that is a tall, skinny kickboxer from New Zealand. As many wonderful things and as many times as lightning has struck, he can't deal with an Olympic wrestling medalist from Cuba, right? He did. And that closed the conversation on can Adesanya deal with the wrestler. Of course, I'm talking about Yoel Romero, but that closed the conversation forever. Like your ability to go, well, this guy's a great wrestler. He's just going to go take him down. Like you lose that when Adesanya, and it wasn't defeating Yoel Romero. It was defeating that style. So when I hear the argument that Ankalaev is the kryptonite for Pereira, by the way, I just want the argument to be said right. First off, they have a common opponent. One beat him, one didn't. Don't think you need to leave me a comment and tell me about a draw. I'm still saying it right. One beat him and one didn't. And the idea that you've got this dominant wrestler or that somewhere Pereira and kickboxing will have this massive credit of being one of the very few. In that elite very few, just like Maurice Smith when he did it to Mark Coleman, he's not really beating a dominant wrestler.
It just isn't an accurate part of the story. I do think Uncle Live's next. I do think that Uncle Live's awesome. I understand why Uncle Live would be the only one to be favored over Piera. Like, I'm not actually speaking against that match. I'm speaking about the narrative surrounding why it must be that match. We're in a promotion, guys. Now, that word has been corrupted. And it's to the point that when you hear it, I feel as though you forget what it means. And a promotion only goes one way, right? You are not being promoted going this way. Can we agree? You're not being promoted running sideways. Can we agree just by definition? So once you reach the main event, there's nowhere to go. So you bring a title in. That's a bigger deal. Okay, great. You've combined two things. You combine title and main event. Boom. Great. Piera, the biggest draw, saved the company, volunteered for 300, the only champion to publicly do it, volunteered to take on Tom Aspinall in a different weight class to save 300, the only champion to do it, and he meant it, does the same trick on June 29th of International Fight Weekend when Conor McGregor stubs his pinky toe, and he did it against the one guy no one wants to fight, which isn't just Jiří Procházka, it's the guy that was a hard fight and you already beat him. That's the guy nobody wants to fight. You get a guy in the rear view, leave him there. Piera did it. So now Piera has a new challenge, right? You ever want to discuss who the biggest star in the sport is? It's a real easy thing to do. You're going to look at who's licensed and then you're going to come down to the numbers and it's going to be between O'Malley and Piera. And if you go look at straight numbers of who accomplished what, it leans towards O'Malley. But when you do look at numbers, shelf life matters. And if we're taking O'Malley at his word and he could be out for up to 12 months and Piera is going to remain busy, right? You've got the top star. He's watery too, but think about how big he is. Think about how big and how meaningful he is. He's the main event. Can't go anywhere else. Now he's got the title and the main event. And you're telling me in a promotion, you're going to take a guy that's not main event. You're going to take a guy who's never main evented. And all he has to do is win his next fight and he gets to go into the main event for the world title. And your reasoning for that isn't just the rankings. It's the style. It's the fact that one's being protected. They're being kept apart from each other. And then you get confronted with, no, his style, even if you ask him, is not wrestling. Oh, and by the way, keep them apart from each other. They have a common opponent, and it wasn't an easy one. It was a world champion named Jan Blachowicz. Like, I'm not sold on the idea. The number one thing that does make me believe it and see it, and there's not another 205-pounder out there making an argument. There's not another 205-pounder out there that isn't just standing back and saying, yeah, go right on ahead. And when you stand back and everybody stands back quietly saying the same thing, which is absolutely nothing, you decide and we'll do what you want. You don't mean that. You don't want them to decide. You don't want to do what they want. But when you choose to make that your stance, that is how a guy that has not fought on a pay-per-view main card ever that I'm aware and is ranked number 8, which is the lowest we have ever gone to in the modern era by choice, outside of illness or injury, Khalil Roundtree comes in and takes the spot. And that's just the reality. It's not a knock on Khalil. It most certainly is not a knock on Uncle Live. But it's the idea that you believe our biggest star, who can't go any higher, he's already the headliner of the two biggest events of the year, 300 International Fight Weekend. He's already done that. And so now we're going to put him in a position where to bring all that star power and bring everything against an unknown opponent. That's what we're doing this Saturday. Oh, and by the way, his reward if he wins is that we're going to do it to him again. You're going to bring him a non-main eventer and a non-champion. We're just supposed to look at records and say that's great and that's interesting. We will. If no 205-pounder says anything, that's true. But as far as the idea that that has to happen and it's the only reasonable thing, when the background that one guy brings isn't the one you keep saying, at least not if you asked him directly, and common opponents have already been matched. Michael Jordan was the one athlete you could get people to tune in for just for his greatness. And in combat sports, there's only been two. Mike Tyson, Floyd Mayweather. And I think that needs amended to add Conor McGregor. But in a broad stroke, right, it's something that you really do need both sides. And I will admit that Piera is the biggest I think Piera can do a lot of work on his own, but I think it, I haven't actually seen it. He's always been matched up very appropriately with a guy that will match him also within the press, and now he's got to go out and do one he wasn't expected. And the reward for doing that is he's going to get asked to do it again. Let's see what happens. And you do what you want with that information. But that is the first time you've been given the correct information. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And thank you to Damien, who left me a comment on Spotify. I read them all, guys, but let me tell you what Damien said. No better way to start my morning than a nice hot cup of coffee and some good old Uncle Chale to get me through the day. Well, thank you. That sounds like the perfect start to any day. Enjoy UFC 307. It is going down from Salt Lake on Saturday. I'm going to be there, but I'm going to be back here with you on Tuesday to discuss it all. Until then, I'm Chale Sonnen, and you are welcome.